It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the program, advocates for homeless people around the country are trying to build homes, tiny houses, to provide shelter and the basic necessities. We'll hear about a Wisconsin effort after 4:30.
First, we're kicking off a week-long series today that takes stock of Wisconsin's 3 years after the passage of the controversial budget repair bill, otherwise known as Act 10. When Act 10 was introduced in early 2011, it set off a whirlwind of events that put Wisconsin in the center of the national media spotlight. The law, which limited the ability of public workers in Wisconsin to collectively bargain, drew strong praise and strong criticism and created a political climate in the state unlike anything seen before.
Later in the week, we'll talk with two state legislators, one who supports the bill and one of the Wisconsin 14 who left the state in protest of it. We'll also talk with a school superintendent who says Act 10 made his district more efficient and get a labor perspective on the bill as well.
To give us some background on how we got here and to talk about some of the developments in the last couple of years, we've got Jason Stein and Patrick Marley in the studio. Jason and Patrick cover the state capitol for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and they're the authors of the book More Than They Bargained For, Scott Walker, Unions, and the Fight for Wisconsin. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Veronica.
And Patrick, great to have you as well.
Thanks for having me on, Veronica.
So it has been 3 years already since Wisconsin was at the center of the media universe, at least it seemed that way, during the Act 10 battle. And Jason and Patrick, you've covered this story for a long time now. Let's start with you, Patrick. What is the biggest thing that stands out to you about the aftermath of Act 10 3 years down the road?
Well, there's a lot. The biggest thing would be the sort of the reduction of the clout of the unions. Unions for a long time in Wisconsin were a big force in politics. You know, they were the sort of the major player for the outside groups among the Democrats, or one of the most major players, and their ability to sustain that looks substantially diminished because they've lost so much money with the changes to the labor law. Obviously, there are a lot of effects for workers too, in terms of the protections that they had with unions have essentially gone away. Unions continue to exist at the state and local level, but they can only negotiate over wages. They can't bargain over vacation or any other time off, worker safety, those kinds of issues that for decades they had bargained on.
And Jason?
Well, and then as well, there were about $1 billion in cuts that were made to school and local government budgets to help balance a state budget shortfall at the time. And since then, you know, we've gotten information, pretty good information, to show that the strong majority of those cuts to schools were made up by spending cuts that were made possible through Act 10, and those were largely to employees' compensation. A lot of that boils down to lowering employees' take-home pay by reducing their benefits. For local governments, we still have not, and probably will never have, really good data on that, and it kind of boils down to there's not one group or agency that really collects the data from local governments that you need to get a really comprehensive take on that.
Now, lest anyone have forgotten all of the events that happened back in early 2011, let's just take a little bit of a review there. A new governor's in the office. His party controls both chambers of the state legislature. And, Patrick, what happens next?
So the governor was in office for perhaps 30 days, and he introduced this bill that was going to cut the take-home pay of state and local workers by requiring them to pay more for their health care and pay more for their pensions. And then that was to set the stage for cuts to how much the state gave in aid to local governments with the budget that would come just a few months later. And then it also more broadly, as I said before, just reduced the ability of unions to negotiate over a whole host of issues. That the governor's plan was to really dispense with that in a week, get it introduced, have a hearing, have both houses pass it on his desk, signed into law. They anticipated some labor actions from state and local unions. Perhaps they wouldn't show up for work or do some other things. They did not expect these massive protests, and that's exactly what happened, is that tens, perhaps even 100,000 people on some days came to the Capitol and occupied it for a very long period of time. We became, you know, a spotlight nationally. And then just as this was to be taken up by the state Senate, the 14 Democrats who then were in the Senate left the state, went to Illinois, and that triggered an aspect of the state constitution that says you have to have 2/3 of the senators present to pass certain types of bills that deal with money. And they were one vote shy of that by the senators departing. So
three-fifths,
not 2/3. I'm sorry. How could I forget these things?
It's been 3 years.
Yeah. So they were then they were gone for about a month, and the state legislature really ground to a halt. If you also remember, at this time they then tried to send it through the assembly and did, but it took 62 hours of debate over 3 days to get through that house. Eventually, the Senate found a way around the three-fifths issue by changing some aspects of the bill, but not the things that were sort of most important to the protesters, put it through, and the Democrats returned. And then we had a year and a half of recalls.
To put a cap
not
on it.
Not to be
right,
yeah. Right.
Well, the sights and sounds are something that will stick with a lot of people for a long time. And I want to start, we have a little bit of audio from Governor Walker talking about why he thought Act 10 was necessary. Let's listen.
What we're doing is not about being Republican or Democrat. It's about being honest and realistic with the public. We told the people of this state that the two crises we believe we faced were economic and fiscal. I told people all throughout the campaign what I thought the problem was, how I thought I could solve it, and now we're out implementing. And I think the fact that some disagree with it certainly is their right, but we're doing and acting exactly the way we told people we would to tackle these two crises, to get people working again and to get the state budget working again.
Now, a clip there from Governor Walker talking about the reasons behind Act 10. Jason, what goes through your mind as you hear that 3 years later? Does it still sound like something Governor Walker would say today?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think there's an important caveat there that I think during his 2010 campaign, he did talk a lot about the problems with the state budget. He talked about the fact that state employee benefits were part of the problem and needed to be part of the solution. The 2010 campaign was not, however, focused at all on collective bargaining being a problem that also needed to be tackled. It only came up in a few more tangential ways. So he certainly made it clear, I think, in the 2010 campaign that he would take on the issue of employee benefits. But it came as a surprise to many people, including some Republicans, that he took on the collective bargaining issue as well. I think we will see this issue come up in his campaign this year against Democrat Mary Burke. I think we'll see, some assessment, as part of the campaign about how well and in what ways that law is acting. But I don't think it'll be the focus of the campaign. I think the economy of the state will be front and center, has been and will continue to be front and center.
And there was a clip we heard of Governor Walker. Now, as we remember, Act 10 drew tens of thousands of protesters to the Capitol, people who were passionately opposed to Act 10. And here's a clip of sound from that from 3 years back. A little time capsule of the protests there. Patrick, just briefly, what was the scene like then?
Well, it was just unimaginable prior to that to see anything like that. If 2,000 people came to the Capitol, it was a really big deal. When there was the first Tea Party protest, which must have been in 2009, and that was outside the Capitol lawn. It was Governor Doyle at the time. He thought that was a lot of people. We thought that was a lot of people. To see the Capitol just packed wall to wall like a rock concert, where you couldn't get through from one side of the Capitol to the other, was something none of us had ever experienced. And it lasted for essentially a month. I mean, it ebbed and flowed, and there were some times when security was tightened and fewer people were in the Capitol. But really, you had a community there that was, you know, one thing we talk about in our book that was this little detail we came across was that Senator Fred Risser, who's from Madison, his office became a place where women who had babies would go to nurse their children. It became this little place where they could go and seek refuge from the crowds. So you had other places where people were giving out food or handing out water or just giving directions to people. There were posters everywhere, and there were a lot of characters, people dressed up, and it was noisy. And sometimes it smelled like a gymnasium, and there were people banging on drums, and there was nonstop chanting.
We're talking right now with Jason Stein and Patrick Marley of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's been 3 years since the passage of Act 10 in Wisconsin, and we're launching a week-long series to talk about the impact of that legislation and what it's done in Wisconsin. You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. 3 years later, how do you think Act 10 has served Wisconsin, and what will be its lasting impact? We're talking about Act 10 now, 3 years after its passage, and we're launching a week-long series today looking at the impact the laws had. Jason Stein and Patrick Marley from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel are with us in studio to get things started, and you can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. What do you think the lasting impact of Act 10 on Wisconsin will be? And Jason, let's go to you now. In the passage of Act 10, Wisconsin and Governor Walker were sometimes seen as being at the vanguard of new legislation that had the potential to be used more widely on a national level as a model for other states. Has it had that impact?
Yes, it has. And we certainly were a vanguard. We were a vanguard 50 years ago in Wisconsin when we became the first state to allow union bargaining by public employees at across the state, across the state. And we were in many ways a leader as well in rolling back some of that, a good deal of that authority to bargain on the part of unions. We specifically saw in after Wisconsin, Indiana ended up passing a right-to-work law, which essentially means that unions and employers can't reach an agreement requiring everyone who works for an employer to pay in union dues, which is essentially one of the things that Act 10 did for public sector workers. And then you saw Michigan also pass a right-to-work law.
And if I can just chime in, Ohio is the clearest parallel to Wisconsin. Just after Governor Walker did this, Ohio passed a very similar law to Wisconsin's rolling back collective bargaining for public workers and also going further in some ways because it included police officers and firefighters, which Wisconsin exempted. But unlike Wisconsin, I don't know if they have recalls in Ohio, but they have a voter initiative where you can recall a law, essentially, and the public had an election less than a year after this was passed by the legislature to block it from going into place, and it never actually took effect.
And Patrick, you started by saying one of the things that struck you the most over the last 3 years is that the power of public sector unions has greatly weakened. Is it an overstatement to say that the power of unions in Wisconsin has been broken?
I don't know. I mean, they're still live entities. They're out there. They are doing different kinds of works. I mean, they certainly are operating in a diminished capacity. I guess it's up for the, you know, the unions and their critics to decide whether they've been broken. But certainly they've been substantially weakened.
Jason, you look thoughtful. What are you thinking?
Well, I mean, there's certainly you can look just empirically. You can look at the numbers in terms of spending on lobbying. Certain unions like the Wisconsin Education Association Council, which is obviously our state teachers union, was perennially one of the very top, let's say, number one, number two spenders on lobbying at the Capitol. They're no longer anything close to that. Let's say they'd be more like in the 30 to 40 ranking range. I believe at this point, and I wouldn't look for them to crack the top 10, you know, again.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Dale with us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, what do you think?
Hi, Dale.
Hi, I just wanted to correct the record. You know, the reporters, I think, gave a very good summary of what happened, especially going up to Act 10. But I think a key fact that needs to be out there is that Scott Walker never told people his intent to take away worker rights and union rights. And if he would have done that, he never would have been elected. And so I think that's a centerpiece that, when you look at this history, you know, it needs to be clearly out there that he really misled the voters in Wisconsin, and he continues to mislead people when he talks about, you know, what his intentions were.
Patrick, do you want to respond?
Sure. I think Jason talked a little bit about how what the governor, or Scott Walker, who turned out to be governor after 2010, talked about during the campaign, and that's that he did talk about the need, as he saw it, to make workers pay more for their pensions and their health care. And he really talked about that a fair bit, put out news releases, had a press conference about it. He did not, as Dale the caller points out, specifically say, we need to roll back collective bargaining generally and take all these other aspects of union powers and reduce them. And the governor himself acknowledged that. Eventually, you played the clip earlier where he says he thought he conveyed that idea during the campaign. But he did go on to say after Act 10 became law that he wished that he had presented this differently, that he thought the people had given him a mandate to fix the state's problems. He saw the way to do it, and he was going to do it quickly and cleanly, and people would then see the benefits of it. And that looking back, he thinks that he should have done a better job explaining to voters what he saw as the need to be done and how he was going to do it. So I think that addresses the question.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Dale. And Jason, to remember Act 10 is to remember a time when Wisconsin seemed really polarized, very pressurized. There were a lot of rifts created publicly and privately. Has Wisconsin recovered from that yet?
No, that's a great question. I remember at the time, polling by Marquette University showed that I think it was 1 in 5, Patrick, I want to say, people in Wisconsin had stopped talking with someone they knew because it was so, you know, it was so divisive. You know, we did stories about bars that forbade talking about politics because of the disputes it would start, of people that dropped their Facebook friends or criticized their own relatives on Facebook because of disputes over Act 10. And obviously, you know, you had the recalls, which were unprecedented in this state and really historic in terms of our nation's history. Not a lot of – it was only the third gubernatorial recall in the nation's history, first one in which a governor survived. So it certainly was very, very divisive. I would say we are on the way to, you know, repairing some of that division. You know, at this point, there are still live cases in both the state and federal court, right, Patrick?
Correct.
Over Act 10. So I think, you know, it certainly would probably be overstating it to say everything's better, everybody's happy. I mean, because there's ongoing disputes to this day. But we have, I think, there has been at least a scab over the wound. You know, I think that there is some moving on, but it's not total.
And looking ahead to the election season, that scab you talked about, is it going to be ripped off again, or are we going to be just sort of moving forward with something behind us, but moving forward and looking at new issues where Act 10 does not loom so large, Patrick?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, we've sort of been in a state of perpetual elections in Wisconsin since 2010, because we did have 9 recalls, I believe, in 2011. And then we had the governor's recall in 2012, as well as the 4 state senators. And now we've got the regular election again. So everybody feels like they've been in nonstop elections. And of course, that's when people feel the most partisan and they see the most TV ads and they get reminded of politics the most. That said, you know, so far, Act 10 has not featured as a prominent player in this election that is only now getting started. But that issue was really sort of litigated in full in the in the recall of 2012. And I think that, you know, Mary Burke, the candidate running against Scott Walker, has talked some about her position on Act 10, but has not made it a centerpiece of her campaign. So I don't know how much we'll be hearing about that.
Yeah, I mean, there will be some. The governor will point and say, look, this worked. You know, his opponents will say it didn't. And Mary Burke has said that she would roll back certain aspects of Act 10. She hasn't said which ones yet. So, I mean, there'll be some discussion, but I don't think it'll be front and center.
All right. Thank you both for being here. Jason, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us on.
And Patrick, thank you, too.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Jason Stein and Patrick Marley. They cover the state capitol for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and they're the authors of More Than They Bargained For, Scott Walker, Unions, and the Fight for Wisconsin.